What's up, everybody? Welcome to the round table, in this case, a rectangular table. We're back in the podcast setup, but we're still doing a round table discussion of our last episode of Game Nights, Strixhaven, and we're a little late this time because we had quite the crazy weeks.
Yeah, if you've been following us on social media, you know what that's all about. But we did want to do the round table. There were a number of questions. We made some mistakes. Olivia and Kat are not here, but as we've done before, they're going to be showing up in some clips that we had them record answering some of the questions that were asked of them. So again, we always go over this, but we want to make sure everybody knows the goal of the roundtable episodes is to cover the most asked questions and most commented on moments that we receive via YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, etc. regarding the Game Night Strixhaven episode. Yeah. If you want to have a chance to have your comment addressed and shown on screen during these episodes, the best way to do that is to comment within the first 24 hours, because that's the time when we're usually rounding up the comments. On this one, yeah, it took us a few more days because we were pretty busy with other stuff, so you might actually have gotten in there even if you replied 3 or 4 days later, but that's generally not the case.
Yeah, and make your comments not like two words, right? Usually the comments that have a little more context, ask a deeper question, or tied into other things will be the ones that we sort of find. If it's just like a, I love this, we love that you loved it, but we're probably not going to show it.
I love it. Just say I love this. I'm totally fine.
Yeah. Actually, if it's just that, I'll take that any day. Of course, spoilers ahead. The Game Night Strixhaven episode has already aired. Make sure you watch it if you haven't, because this episode we'll be talking about everything that happens in the game. And of course, you don't want that spoiled if you haven't watched the episode. Or maybe you're one of those weird people that like that.
If you like it and you don't mind being spoiled, that's totally fine. But if you do mind being spoiled, hit pause, go watch the episode. Come back, because we will be ruining it. This is a spoiler show.
Open up a new tab.
Yep. And final disclaimer, we're not calling anyone stupid or dumb or whatever for having the questions that you have. The fact that there were a lot of people with the same question, and we don't usually tend to answer questions that only one or two people out of, you know, hundreds of thousands asked.
Yeah.
We're usually answering the questions that came up over and over again. The fact that a lot of people are having the question generally means that we screwed something up and we didn't explain something right, or that we made a legitimate mistake, which there were a couple of them in this episode. So these are our mistakes, not yours. Don't feel bad if, even if we bring up your comments and we say, well, that's not correct, it's probably our fault that you were confused by it.
Yeah.
All right, let's start with some general questions for the entire group.
That we want to ask, because there weren't that many questions asking how we came up with it.
Right. Why did everyone choose their school, first of all, and then their specific commander from that school? Let's just start with Olivia here and see why she chose Felisa.
So I chose Silverquill, obviously, because black and white are just kind of my colors. They're the two, you know, ones I play all the time in Magic. At first, I wasn't super sure on the school, like if I would have chosen that college or fit in there. But after seeing kind of the new take on white-black and some of the cards they had available and, you know, the political aspects that was involved there, it was a pretty natural fit for me.
Very good. Olivia strikes me as a black-white player, right? She's definitely, those are her colors. And as always, we always give our guests the chance to first pick their commanders, and Josh and I go last because we've been on way too many of these. We don't need to be taking someone else's number one choice from them.
And in this case, I think Olivia was like, it responded within 2 seconds of the email being sent out, like, Silverquill!
Yeah, I even think Kat may have responded being like, I think I know what Olivia's going to choose.
Yeah. And Kat was also very much Witherbloom. In fact, let's go to Kat's clip here and hear about why she chose Dina as her commander.
So why did I choose Witherbloom? Because I get to work with animals. No, I'm just kidding. Why did I really choose Witherbloom as my school? I mean, I think that most people that know me pretty much know me as a green-black player, whether it's just straight up green-black rock or Jund or Abzan, some variation. I play other decks, but I always go back to that as my my go-to. And I remember the first time I read a description of Witherbloom, and I think it started out with Witherblooms are goth bio majors. I was like, all right, I'm sold. Like, that's all I need. And that they like ride zombie crocs around in the swamp and catch like critters and make stupid jokes. And I was like, that's my school, we're good. And then on top of the flavor, I really like the new green black cards. I think that it's like a nice refreshing take on the green black dynamic. We've still got the life death balance thing going on, which is like huge for me, both in Magic and just in my personal life. But it's a little refreshing because we're not so like fixated on the graveyard, and we've got more of like a life gain drain dynamic going on. So yeah, I mean, I'm a Witherbloom through and through.
It's funny because when we were eating right before the episode, Kat was talking about being, you know, in the medical field, and Witherbloom has that aspect of like crazy concoctions and mixing things together. So it actually fit really, really well with her profession as well.
Jimmy, do you want to talk about why you chose Quandrix and Jadzy as your school and commander?
So a lot of the Quandrix commanders in this set have to do with land drops. And for me, that's kind of boring, the landfall mechanic at this point, just because we've seen it over and over and over again. Craig's played red-green land drop decks. I played red-green landfall decks as well.
I think all of us have played lands matter decks at this point, yeah.
So I like Jadzy because it had lands as a big part of it, but it was more about the front side of it, which is like flip open the top card of your library and cast it for super cheap. And also because it's Quandrix, it's all about mathematics, I wanted to incorporate a theme of like math is for blockers because it's math and I like math and not in the blocking sense. So I wanted to add that like sub theme into it. I figured I'd have enough value that I could be a little more expressive in terms of like, right, just pack it with a ton of value to get the lands out and then hopefully have some really fun game ending type cards that would force other people to like have to make some calculations in their head, which felt like a Quandrix thing to do.
I chose Prismari. Even before looking at the commanders, I was like, I want to be Prismari because we had the choice at the end between the three that were left after Olivia and Kat picked.
Sorry, Lorehold.
Yeah. And I was just like, well, I was a theater major in college.
Ah.
And so I definitely like Prismari felt like the school that I belonged in from that respect. And then I looked at the commanders and Varin just kind of seemed really cool to me. Ironically, I think Varin actually takes more math than the Quandrix commander takes, but I didn't really necessarily know that going in. It just seemed like you could do some really cool stuff.
Yeah.
So that, you know, I don't think I knew quite how powerful that deck was going to be.
I don't think any of us did, honestly. We were all like, wow, look at it, do its thing. Okay, cool. We're going to die in a few turns, not next turn.
Yeah, it definitely was more powerful than I thought. Because again, we build these decks and we goldfish and we test them out a little bit, but in general, it's like, it's not like we've played them 100 times. Before we go on the show. So yeah, that's why I chose Prismari and Varin. Let's talk about something somebody or a few people noticed at the very beginning of the episode, Jimmy, because Kat was playing a Witherbloom commander, and Witherbloom is green and black. And
this is the first time she's been on the show as well, which means
so she was getting knighted. And everyone was like, well, why didn't Kat get knighted with the Sword of Feast and Famine, which we've knighted many people for in the past? And in fact, we have a clip here from Kat talking about this moment, and she's probably going to spoil why that didn't happen, why the Sword of Feast and Famine wasn't used.
Okay, so the sword and the whole knighting thing. Here I was, it's my first time on game nights, and I'm like super excited, nervous, like butterflies, and I know they're gonna knight me. And then Jimmy goes to pick up the Sword of Feast and Famine, which I love because it just looks super cool, and even though it's protection from green black, I just love how it looks. So he goes to knight me, and I look up at it, and it is like dangling by a thread, like it's like broken in half and just like hanging by a thread.
Okay, well, it was used, it just wasn't used safely or carefully.
We should play the clip actually of the moment when you actually break the sword so that they could see it. Oh, and Kat, it is your first time on the show, so Jimmy, would you like to do the honors?
I would. And then while Josh is
Jimmy!
All right, well,
we can definitely,
I mean, we're sad about it.
We
but
are.
That's fine.
Everybody in the middle will understand. No!
But in all seriousness,
it'll definitely be able to be glued.
That can
together.
Be fixed.
See how strong you are?
Yeah.
We'll just 3D print my power. One. I think by the way that you really just barely nicked it on something, and it was going to break no matter what.
Yeah, at some point, right? Yeah. So the sword was made by Mel Lee, who's been on the show before, and it's actually not a solid piece of stuff. It's actually 3D printed. And so on the inside, it's actually hollow, but it's got like little lines and
it's
stuff
almost
that
like
go
foam.
Through. Yeah, a little bit. So there actually are a lot of natural breaking points in 3D printed stuff, and this one's a bit top heavy, as you can tell, because it's a big sword. So yeah, maybe I nicked it a little harder than I should have, but it was sort of on its way to that inevitable end.
I'm looking for it now, but I think we took it out of the room.
Yeah, so I wouldn't break it again, right?
Yeah, I think the way that it just sort of snapped when you barely did anything to it tells me that it was already sort of fractured and probably It was going to break no matter what.
Yeah. But this means that maybe we can ask Mel to help us make another one.
Mel, I hope you're watching this.
Please,
we need another one. Sorry for breaking the first
one. I'm sorry. All right. Well, now that we're past the part where I embarrass myself, let's talk about some rules questions.
Yeah. So this first one is an interesting one. And so a lot of people brought up that, Jimmy, there's a moment in the game where you're... Vesuva,
mm-hmm. my land,
enters the battlefield and you choose to copy a Temple of the False God, I believe.
Yes, I think I wanted that double tap right. for two mana.
However, a lot of people pointed out that you can't do that because they all entered the battlefield at the same time. In fact, we have a clip of this. Let's play the clip.
So I can put any number of land cards from my hand onto the battlefield. Fortunately, I have seven lands in my hand. They are... Bloodstrand, Misty Rainforest, Breeding Pool, Myriad Landscape, Ancient Tomb, Temple of the False God, and Vesuva, which will enter as a copy of Temple of the False God.
Holy crap.
Wow. Oh, Jimmy. Going to Value Town.
Yep. I understand why you did it. Yeah, you did want that, you know, like, one extra mana. Why wouldn't I want that?
Yeah, right?
But because Vesuva says as it enters the battlefield, not when it enters the mm-hmm. battlefield... You can't actually have it copy something that's entering at the same time as it.
Yep.
Because as it's coming in, the other thing's not there yet. So
they're together on the same train. They haven't stepped off the train yet.
So if it said when, then the when would trigger once it entered, and then it would say, oh, that trigger resolves, and it looks around and goes, yep, everything's there, but it says as.
Yeah.
So that everyone was right. Jimmy wouldn't have been able to copy the Temple of the False God.
Would it have mattered? No.
I don't think it would have.
I'm pretty sure I died right after that turn.
All right, let's talk about the thing that was probably, it absolutely was the most commented on thing, and definitely it was a bit of a mistake on our part, a rules mistake. So when the Mizzix's Mastery is going off.
The big game ender.
Yeah, I'm kind of going crazy. I'm casting, like, whatever, all the spells on my graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy, in response to the Mizzix's Mastery being played, had cracked a fetch land, used his Retreat to Coralhelm. He cracked a fetch land and chosen to tap down my commander.
Yes.
And then, while Mizzix's Mastery was going off, I made a token copy of my commander. And then Mizzix's Mastery... was still stacking all the effects that I had sort of put down there, and I had an accelerate to give that token haste.
Copy, right.
Yeah, but the problem is that when all the spells from Mizzix's Mastery are put in the stack, or put on the stack, you have to choose all the targets right then. And because mm-hmm. the token didn't exist at the moment when all those spells were put on the stack, accelerate could not have targeted the token copy, so I could not have given it haste with the accelerate. And we do have a clip of this entire moment, so let's play that real quick. I'm going to play Mizzix's Mastery. So I'm going to exile all the instants and sorceries in my graveyard and then cast them.
Oh, no.
All right, Mizzix's Mastery is now going to resolve. So I'm going to find all the instants and sorceries in my graveyard. Let's see how many there are. There are...
so many.
So I'm looking at the cards and I have to place them all on the stack in a specific order and choose their targets. And I can't change that once they start to resolve. Hang on, let me figure this out. So combined with Burgi and all the triggers, it's a lot to think about. And I just hope I do this right. I'm going to create a token that's a copy of one of my creatures. I'll target my commander. Then I will cast Accelerate. This one will target my Varan token and give it haste.
I understand why this mistake was made. It's really hard to think about, right, when everything's on the stack and it's resolving. You're like, okay, cool. Well, I'm going to do something. That's going to resolve first. But when you actually put the spells on the stack, they need to have legal targets. You can't wait to target until afterwards, right? They enter the stack at that moment they're targeting. And then if you do anything on top of that, those spells have already sort of made their decision.
Yep. Also, and this is related, so we can cover it kind of all at the beginning or all at the same time. The Varan token... wouldn't have necessarily seen all the Mizzix spells
right.
get cast, or in this case, copied, because that had already happened before the token existed.
So it wouldn't have gotten super pumped up, and then that buffed up, and then it would swing out like that.
Right, so it's an interesting thing where Varan wouldn't have gotten as big and wouldn't have necessarily had haste based on the Mizzix's Mastery. Now, a lot of people are saying, you know, this is huge because it means that I couldn't have taken Jimmy out with the Varan, in which case it changes the ending of the game. So how to address this? this is a probably the most complicated turn that's ever happened on game nights, I would say. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk in a minute about how long the turn actually took. But I will say there was a number of avenues to me killing Jimmy and Cat. That wasn't in question. So one of the easy ways to do it was Prismari Command Fury Stormed. Fury Storm copies itself.
Yep.
And then you copy enough Fury Storms to then on the final one where you've got a bunch of Fury Storms, copy the Prismari Command. Boink. And deal 2 damage to any target and take them both out.
Yeah.
I didn't go that route because I wanted to draw more cards. And I could have drawn two and discarded two a bunch with the Prismari Command and still kind of gotten down to that. And also just going infinite just doesn't feel great on game nights. And I wanted to do it a little bit more cleanly, which is like attack you, hit you for 32. And it's pretty clear like what happened for people. So it did not change the outcome, right? Cat and Jimmy were dead. I also had Crimson Wisp in the deck and a million ways to like cast more cantrips. So definitely I could have pumped the thing still given it haste after the Mizzix's Mastery was done.
You might have even found a way to get the field back, the ones dealing damage. There was just a lot of different ways that Josh could have probably found the win. Especially because...
I had no way around Teferi's Protection.
The double kill.
Yeah.
Yeah. You also drew so many cards with the explosion, right? You could have inevitably, right? You drew it down to how many cards were left in your deck at that point?
Three,
yeah. So pretty sure you would have drawn a win condition or a way to figure it out.
I also could have targeted the card draw from explosion to Cat in that moment to draw less if I thought I was going to draw out my deck. So I wasn't in danger of actually decking myself. I drew down to three cards on purpose, thinking that I could win on the next turn and I didn't need more than three cards to do it.
Right.
There's just a lot of... we messed it up. Mizzix's Mastery is pretty complicated. And, you know, in the moment, we were trying to shortcut it and we were trying to figure out...
a clean, easy way. Both also keep in mind that we need to explain it to the audience in a way that's not going to make your heads hurt.
That happens a lot on game nights behind the scenes, which is like, okay, we know what's going to happen. Now, how do we do that in the most easy to explain manner? And you don't see that because that's behind the scenes. But a lot of times, you know, Jimmy will be like, I'm going to do this thing and I know the outcome. But how do we do it in such a way that it's going to be clear to the audience step by step what's going on? And so a lot of times we sit around and we'll make decisions like that's not technically the order that it would happen. But as far as like letting people follow what's going to happen, that's the best way to do it. You'll notice this in that a lot of times we will sort of resolve Rhystic Study triggers after the spell because it feels really weird to be like, I cast this thing. Hold on, Rhystic Study. Then the thing comes out. It feels way much better to go, dragon. Cool, dragon. That's scary. And then go, by the way, are you going to pay for Rhystic Study? That's not technically how Rhystic Study works, but for the sake of storytelling and the smoothness of like watching the game, we will flub things like that.
Yeah.
Just for the viewer.
The only time that we would make sure that the Rhystic Study does happen first is just like, I cast a spell. I need to draw a card off Rhystic Study to make sure, to see if I can potentially counter it.
Yep.
And in those cases, right, everyone knows what's happening. So again, it's more for clarity than anything else.
Yeah. We want to make it smooth for the viewer more than like stick to the exact letter of the law. But in cases like Mizzix's Mastery, where it took a long, long time to figure out the order of everything, and it was just easier to like, let's just resolve each one as it goes so that it's easier to watch and it doesn't take forever.
You were kind of like Doctor Strange when he's interpreting all the different outcomes and thinking about what could happen when he's got the time stone.
It wasn't just me either. So the next chapter heading, I guess, is that turn took how long?
Oh, very long.
Yeah. So that turn took almost 2 hours.
Right.
Just to figure out. What we did is we knew it was going to be so complicated. I was like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to cut for lunch. Everyone's going to eat. I'm going to bring my lunch up here and I'm going to try and figure out during
how
lunch
I'm going to do this,
what the order is and how we're going to do it. And then as I was doing it, everyone's breaking for lunch. I'm up there eating lunch, doing the thing. Then as everybody finished lunch, like Murph, Jake, Manson, they come up and we're all sitting around the table and trying to figure out like the best way to not only tell the story of how this is happening so it's clear, but also to get the outcome that we know is going to happen in the cleanest way possible. So it literally took 2 hours to sort of figure out the order and how that was going to go off camera for what was, you know, a couple minutes on screen. In fact, we have some clips from, I think, Kat and Olivia both talking about how complicated that turn ended up being.
Oh, Mizzix's Mastery. I feel like, if I remember correctly, it's almost like we started that turn before we broke for a meal and then came back. And Josh is still up figuring it out, trying to figure how they're going to make everything work, what the stack's going to look like. I feel like that turn took forever. And obviously, like, for every good reason, it should. It had so much going on. There were obviously, like, things to mess up, which happens in Commander because there are so many different like variables. There's so many different actions and things can have effects that you maybe didn't see the first time you laid it out. It was a, it was quite a turn. And yeah, that was something else to witness.
So basically he cast this spell and we all realized what was happening. And first of all, we were like, holy crap. And second of all, Olivia was like, oh my God, I'm so glad I cast that Teferi's Protection. Like seriously, she had no idea it was coming. I mean, literally the best time Teferi's Protection I've ever seen, ever. And then at that point, we basically all just ducked out and went and ate lunch because we were like, this is going to take a while. So from like your perspective as the viewer of this episode, that turn took like a few minutes. From our perspective, it was like over an hour. I mean, we basically all realized what was going on. And yeah, we ducked out and ate lunch and we were hanging out. And there was a lot of discussion about like how to execute this turn. I mean, Josh was just using like all the brain power he could to figure this out. And then when we went to actually go to do the turn, it was, I mean, it took a long time because it was every single spell step by step by step.
Yeah, Mystics' Mastery is a insane card. And I think if you're going to put it in your deck, you kind of know, okay, here are my routes to victory. Because it would not be fun to be at a table and have someone cast it and then everyone goes, okay, I'm going to go to the bathroom, I guess.
I'm going
to
eat.
This out. Yeah, I got to
do
something.
Just text me when you're ready.
I'm
going to
drive home and come back.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll see you tomorrow. Just, I'm dead, right? Everyone agrees they're dead? Okay, great. That doesn't feel good. So just at least know how
you're
going to
end the game.
In a real game,
you can do that, right?
Yeah.
Oh, how many spells are you going to cast off at 40? Okay, I concede.
Okay, yeah.
But on game nights, we can't do that.
Right.
So I think that's also a thing. I think there's a pretty good chance we just sort of quietly discourage people from playing Mystics' Mastery from now on.
Yeah.
You know, not a, maybe a, maybe a, like a soft house ban, just because it is a huge headache in production and post-production.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there. And before anyone accuses us of cheating or any of that stuff, every single person knew the moment that Josh cast it and how many cards were in his graveyard and what he was about to do. Everyone was like, okay, this game's over. There's no way it doesn't end at this point, knowing what's happened, knowing how low my life total was. Outside, sorry, the game is not over. I'm dead. You're dead.
Cat's dead, yeah.
Yeah. And
Olivia's going to get some amount of turn, because I knew in my deck I had literal no way for Teferi's Protection for me to like punch through that.
I don't think there is any way, actually.
Even yeah,
if
once
you had
it's
extra
resolved.
Turn spells, yeah. Right? There's nothing you can do. You just have to wait for them to take their turn again.
Yeah,
good,
so
good
we
card.
We knew Cat and Jimmy were gone at that point. It was just a figure out what position I would be in afterwards and then what was going to happen with Olivia.
It's been a long day.
Yeah. I think actually if Olivia's not Teferi's Protected there, I definitely win the game and the whole thing's a lot easier because
yeah,
I don't have to worry about what position I'm in. I just have to like kill everybody.
Yeah, that's right. Because after the whole turn, you also have to sit there and go, okay, I need to be in a position where I'm not going to die as well either right. In the crackback. Well, didn't think about the millback though.
Millback.
Yeah, sorry.
Is that a thing? Evidently it is.
It is, yeah. And even after those 2 hours, we still got some stuff wrong. So again, it's a headache of a card. There's so much going on, so much to think about. Bummer.
Yeah. But okay. I don't think the outcome of the game was actually affected in any way. So that's the good news. All right, let's talk about some gameplay decisions here. There was a lot of questions. This next category or chapter is called Patience, Jimmy.
Patience.
Let's play the clip real quick.
While that is on the stack, I'm going to crack my Misty Rainforest, go to 14, and get a forest.
Nice.
When it enters the battlefield, I'll gain a life because of the Courser, going back up to 15, and I'm going to use my Retreat to Coral Helm trigger to tap down your commander.
Yep, seems smart before it gets too big. So a lot of people were asking, Jimmy, why did you crack the fetch land to tap down my commander before Mystics' Mastery resolved? Why not wait right until combat and then do it?
Well, I didn't think you were going to cheat, for one, Josh, you know, with the accelerate. No, I'm just kidding. So M's Mastery, the fact that it was going to let Josh basically take the turn that he did, to me said, okay, if you don't act right now, there's a slightly higher chance that whatever's going to about to happen might not be able to work out. Maybe Josh can find a way to untap his card or, well, no, maybe that. He would have bounced maybe something, right, that could have stopped the effect or stifled it or whatever it was. Right. So I was like, you know what? in my head, I didn't think you were going to make a copy of your commander, untap it, give it haste and all that stuff, right? So I was just like, I'm going to tap it down now. Also, I think I wanted to just not have to think about and wait, right? Like, to me, I was just like, there's so much going on. I'm pretty sure this is the safest play, given that you're all tapped out and you're about to resolve this insane thing. So let's do this while the setting is still quiet.
I think also, like, I don't believe I had any blue mana available to me at that moment. I end up creating some treasures to give me the blue mana.
Yeah.
So you didn't want to wait until I maybe get... Because I have, like, Sublime Epiphany, I think, in the deck. And so I do have some ways to, like, get rid of a triggered ability.
Yeah, I think you only had one blue up.
So it does seem safe at that moment to do it, because I have less tools available to me right then than I am probably going to have after all the Mizzix Mastery stuff resolves.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of times where I've been burned by sandbagging a little too hard, especially against blue decks, when they've got all sorts of tricks up their sleeves, and there's just so many cards that you can cast for so cheap and for free these days, I can't keep up. So I was just like, you know what, I'm gonna tap this down early, but ultimately it wouldn't have mattered. Josh would have found a way to murder me either way, I think.
It wasn't gonna matter, yeah, just because there were so many different ways to go, but yeah. I think that was as, like, there's not any ways to poke holes in either play, I think. Doing it then, so that, because I was going to draw a bunch of cards off all the cantrips and everything else too. So, like, doing it before I have more cards in my hand does make sense. And also, I could see waiting until combat as well. Both of those could go sideways on you, though. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened that it did, but I think it would have either way.
Yeah, and to me too, you were so close to killing me with commander damage that it made sense to get rid of your, take your commander, get tapped down as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, the next one is a question for me, and it's a little bit of a similar one.
Yeah, this is at the end of your crazy turn.
Yeah, it's why tap out, Josh? Let's play the clip.
And then with the 2 mana from Burgi, I'm going to play Is It Signet, which creates 1 mana from Burgi because it's not an instant or sorcery. And then I'm going to use the treasure to use the Signet to cast Talisman of Creativity. And then I will tap the Talisman for a colorless, use the 1 mana from Burgi, and I want to cast Walking Atlas. I got 1 mana left from Burgi, but I'm not going to use it because all my 1 mana spells draw me a card and I only have 3 cards left. And then I'll go to my end step and I have 50 million cards, so I'm just going to choose 7 of them and I'll discard this many cards.
Wow.
Josh has discarded to hand size, but it drew his entire library. He's got his best 7, but he's tapped out, and I think I have a window here. Let's see what we can do.
Okay, so yeah, the end of my crazy turn, I just play all the spells that I can and pass the turn to Olivia. I don't leave up any mana. I think I have like 1 treasure.
Yeah. Why did you have interaction? You always run some sort of counterspell, don't you? That could have saved your butt.
Yeah, I didn't have any counterspells in the deck that are either 0 or just 1.
Yeah.
So I knew that I didn't have a way to really do anything on her turn. So to me, because of Burgi,
right,
I was incentivized to just keep using that mana as I could.
And Burgi makes red mana every time it casts a spell, not blue, notably.
Yeah, and was making 2 every time I cast an instant sorcery. So it was just like, let's play as many of these cards as I can, because I'm going to have to discard a bunch of them.
Uh-huh.
And set myself up so I can definitely win on the next turn. And I was basically just banking on the fact that she won't be able to kill me, because based on my life total, it didn't seem like she would be. And, it's not surprising she had Alterative Dementia in her deck, but like, she hadn't drawn a ton of cards that game. She'd drawn some, but she hadn't even seen, you know, probably 25% of her deck. So
yeah.
There's no reason for me to think she has Alterative Dementia in her hand, and all I got to do is fade 1 draw step. And so,
yeah, but high life total, you know, unless she has like, she didn't have, you couldn't even die to a sign in blood, right?
Yeah, technically I could, but we'll talk about that in a second.
Okay.
But I wasn't really worried about, like, I wasn't thinking along those lines. I was just like, most cards won't kill me here. She has something very specific. And I don't have, like, I could bluff that I have something, but I kind of did anyway by just having 1 treasure up. But, you know, she's got to try and kill me if she can anyway. It's not like she can play around anything.
Yeah.
So to me, I just didn't have any interaction. And people were asking, why didn't you include, like, the cheap counter spells?
The one you can cast for free if your commander's out.
Yeah, or at least, like, Swan Song or anything like that.
Yeah.
And the reason is just that, like, I don't necessarily find those cards to be super fun inducing. Now, if we were playing in a high powered game and Cassius is at, or Kyle are at the table, I'm probably more likely to play cards like that. But everybody's decks in this were trying to be around a certain power level. And one of the ways I can kind of clamp down on the power level of my deck is not to include Force of Will and those kind of things. And so I just literally didn't put it into the deck for that reason.
Yeah, you'll run like a Mystical Confluence though, like a 5-mana counter spell, something that's a little less try hard, I guess is the right way to put it.
Wrong. Yeah, good spells, but I don't necessarily want those 0 casts counter spells, and I didn't want to be like a counter heavy deck. I had a couple of them.
Yeah.
I don't like countering people's spells on game nights in general, because people are here to watch people's decks do things, not watch people stop people's decks from doing things.
Yeah, also Prismari, right? Theater, improv. Isn't a counterspell the literal opposite of yes and?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
You're trying to make the scene as exciting as possible.
And they're
like,
no!
You're like, okay. Your director's like, cut. Okay, what was that, Josh? Why did you just stop? They were on a roll. What do you mean you just say no to them?
Yeah, that's a good point. My improv teacher would definitely not like a counterspell. So all that added up, I just didn't have the interaction, which I think is fine. Like, and I got bit for it and I lost the game, and that's how it should have ended. You know, it's not like I didn't do everything I could to win with the deck that I had built, but I didn't build a deck that was only goal was to win, right? It was to do fun things and allow my opponents to also do fun things. Mm-hmm. And I think that bore out in the game. People.
And now Olivia's entered into a very exclusive two-person club, which is Mill Josh out to Altar of Dementia.
Yeah, very exclusive.
Very exclusive, yeah.
All right, let's go to the next question here. And a few people noticed this, but I got to say, in-house, among
yes.
the editors, this was a question we were like... Like, I think near the end, I finally text you. Like, you've
you
got
did.
To explain
you,
it
you
to
You send
me.
An email. It's like, okay, we've been debating this all week at the house. What is this card doing in your deck?
Yeah, so at a certain point, I think you discarded it.
Yes, I did, to one of the big wheels or something. Yeah, I discarded it. I discarded it to Jodzi, the other half of it.
Okay, so you may have... You may have missed it in the episode, but at a certain point, Jimmy announces, I'll discard Jangling Automaton. We didn't show it on screen or anything, so easy to miss. But if you look up Jangling Automaton, here's what it does. Jimmy, you want to read it?
It's a 3-mana artifact creature construct that's a 3/2. Whenever Jangling Automaton attacks, untap all creatures defending player controls.
What else does it say?
That's it.
So
that's it.
It's a creature that when you attack, it untaps the creatures of the player you're attacking.
Yep, that's exactly what it does.
So this is why we were debating all week, because we were trying to figure out, why is this in Jimmy's deck? It doesn't seem to have to do anything else with what's going on.
Yeah.
So, and there were a few people that did catch it and commented on it. In fact, I got a tweet today, I think, that somebody said, like, I got to know, why is Jangling Automaton in Jimmy's deck? So Jimmy... Why is this card in your deck? Please explain.
So, one of my favorite cards that we've ever played on game nights is Saddlebags.
Oh, yeah. Jandor Saddlebags.
And I remember building my deck being like, I want this deck to be able to swing out everything that's got going on and then force the opponent to make a blocking decision.
You wanted to say math is for blockers.
I wanted to say math is for blockers. Yeah, I wanted to
How ponderous have you? I'm going to make you do math.
Yeah, and Jangling Automaton is as jangly as it gets. It is not a good card. No. But I knew that we had Wither Rune player and there are pest tokens running around. It's funny too, because earlier in this episode, I literally used my Retreat to Core Home to tap down your entire board.
Yeah.
And then the card like this just like flies in the face of that. So I just wanted to have this fun, interesting situation where hopefully I'm drawn, right? If you look at my deck list, is literally just ramp, card draw, and then Jangling Automaton type cards, like lure type effects. Because I thought it'd be fun to like have a bunch of lands out and then play a card that would like swing at you, untap everything, figure it out. And then maybe, you know, maybe have other people attack them. I don't know. Either way, like it was just one of those weird, like I wanted to make a meme out of it because it really has no place in the deck otherwise. Don't just click add to card kingdom like buy list and
don't do that.
Yeah, take a couple of edits if you're gonna use my deck.
That's a great thing about Commander, I think, and one of the reasons we love the format is, listen, we're here there to have fun. And so Jimmy was leaving open the possibility of like a crazy funny thing happening.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out it didn't pop up, so he just discarded the card. And you know what? It didn't like cost you the game in any way, right? It didn't matter. And so I think like that's a good lesson for everybody out there. You can have some fun cards in your deck. You know, we talk a lot about on the show about like optimizing and, you know, what are the right cards to play to make your decks more powerful and things like that. And I think that gets misconstrued, because in an instructional way, that is a lot more important for people to know. But we don't say it enough, and maybe it's our fault, that like that doesn't mean like don't do stuff like what Jimmy's trying to do.
Yeah,
here,
put your pet cards in your deck. There are tons of players always do it. It's like, this is my go-to. I love having this in all my decks.
Yeah, and it's like me not putting counterspells in my deck. Why do I do that? I want my opponents to have fun, so I don't want to build the kind of deck that's just going to stop them from doing everything.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's another way to have fun. So think about that when you're building your deck. You can know what perfect optimization or even pushing towards CDH looks like. You don't have to do it, though.
Yeah.
And you can if you want to. Nobody's saying that's bad either. It's just make sure that you don't accidentally hit a target that you're not aiming for.
Yep, or just discard the Jangling Automaton and cause an entire kerfluffle at the office.
We literally were debating. And I'm like, let me see his deck list. And I was like, is there Death Touch somehow to give it so you could lure it, Death Touch it? But then you would need like old school Death Touch. We were really spending a lot of time on it.
Yeah, it's just for the memes.
I mean,
we remember how everyone went nuts over Saddlebags.
That's
so
true. Just trying to recreate that moment.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of fun. Okay, coming up though, we're going to talk about one of, I think, a lot of people's favorite parts of the episode, which is the awesome Strixhaven intro to college videos that played during the episode before and in the middle of it. There's a lot of behind the scenes here, actually. The entire staff here at the Command Zone House went pretty hard on making these.
Yeah, we got some cool exclusive behind the scenes footage that you're going to get to check out, and we're going to answer some questions about how we made those. But first, quick break, because we're going to hear a message from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
All right, we're back. We're talking about the Game Night's Strixhaven episode. This is the round table where we discuss the most commented on moments and things from Twitter, YouTube, all over the social media.
Facebook, medias. Instagram. It's everywhere these days. So snail now, mail. Actually, no one sends snail
mail. No one sends it. Yeah.
Don't send a snail mail, please.
So we're going to go into a little behind the scenes portion here because we're going to talk about the Strixhaven college videos.
Yeah.
Yeah. So these are the five. We did a video for each college. And if you watched the episode, you saw them. That was just kind of like in, we thought of it as like an advertisement that you might see for like a, I don't know. You ever watch the Rose Bowl and like USC or Ohio State will like have an ad like come to school here.
Or you walk into, like if you're applying to colleges, you'll walk into their admissions office and on the TV, it'll be playing that thing, which is just like, come to this school and experience X, Y, and Z.
Yeah. So we thought it would be fun to create a bunch of these, but for the Strixhaven colleges, this was an idea that we came up with pretty late. Only like, it's going to sound like a lot to some people, but it's not very long. Only like 5 weeks. Before this had to come out. We pitched it to Wizards. They liked the idea. They helped us a little bit with budget. And then we had to finish writing, shoot, and then get everything done.
Edit, film, all that stuff.
It was nuts. It's my fault, and I apologize to the team. We had to work pretty hard to get these done on time. We released them singly over social media beforehand as well.
Leading up to the episode. Yeah, great teasers as well. And the reason, if people are like, 5 weeks, that's tons of time. Keep in mind, we've never literally done anything on this scale before, to this degree, with this many people, this many costumes, settings, all of that stuff.
And so, and just doing the effects and everything in the amount, like, by the time we shot it, you only got 3 weeks left to, like, do all the effects and everything like that. Like, 5 weeks is no time at all. I would easily want double that, and it would still probably be a little tight. But anyway, we pulled it off. I wanted to give a big shout to Jordan Pridgen, who wrote the bulk of this stuff, including that Silver Quill slam poem.
Yeah, love that one.
Yeah, he did most of it. But we did get a good amount of help and some idea generation from some freelance writers. You know, one person just can't do all this in the time allotted. So,
and make it to the right quality level too, yeah.
Yep, I wanted to say Lady Danger and Ashlyn Rose, they did a really excellent job with all the production design.
Not just that, the wardrobe as well. They had an entire back area with like little binders and portfolios for every single person and outfit that they're coming in. So they were organized. There was never a moment literally when they were like, oh no, where is this thing? They were on top of everything, which is amazing considering that's not what they do on a normal day-to-day basis. This is something they've actually maybe done for the first time ever. So the fact that they were able to just pick that up, that this is a skill that people in Hollywood hone over years and years of practice.
Yeah, they absolutely crushed it. We're so lucky that we have Lady and Ashlyn, who are like editors on a lot of our stuff, but they also have this cosplaying background and this ability to just create, you know, awesome wardrobe and production design stuff, just because they're just so crafty and so like talented. They also did all the set dressing for that episode of Game Night. So you might notice we had like the faculty wall behind the players that were like the photos in like old school frames, and they dressed all the shelves and everything so that the schools were represented. They made these banners that
hung. Sweet banners, yeah. You'll notice they were in the interviews of the players as well.
So not only are they juggling all the stuff for the college admission videos, they also were doing the onset stuff. So just so much on their plate, and they were able to just hit such a home run with everything.
Yeah.
I also want to say that Ashlyn really helped with producing these short videos. And, you know, there's so many logistics involved. Like you said, every single person had to have like a costume, right?
We had to know where they're going to be in the shoot, what their role was, what their availabilities are.
Yeah. What day is everybody coming in? And we had like 20, 30 different people coming in. Some of them, we need this person on the same day. We also had to think about things like, you know, we had Jovan Shire, from Smosh Games come in and do the painting for the Prismari. Well, okay, if we shoot that, it's going to take this amount of time probably, but then how much time will it take to clean up all the paint that gets splattered everywhere? The fencers, we had to find fencers. Ashlyn was like calling around everywhere in LA, just being like, hey, we need fencers. Do you do that? The drummer, the taiko drummer, all that stuff has to be organized, the logistics. It's just a big undertaking. So big shouts to Ashlyn for helping with the producing of all that
stuff. A lot of emails got sent out that week.
And then, so the shooting of this stuff took a full week. We shot for 5 days. Basically one college each day, although there was some, you have to do things where like, oh yeah, Prismari is the first day, but we got a couple of people's availability. We got to shoot. We got to shoot one Silver Quill person and a Witherboom person on that day as well. Luckily it's green screen, so switching out is not that hard. Big shouts to John Salmon, who was our cinematographer, our DP. This is an old friend of yours, Jimmy, and an old Rocket Jump guy.
Yeah, he shot all of Video Game High School. He shot this amazing movie I was in called Dude Bro Party Massacre 3, very much rated R, so don't watch it if you're a kid.
But it's awesome.
Yeah, it's hilarious. And it was nice because, you know, John was able to bring in a couple of his friends as well that I've worked with in the past. And one of the things about shooting on green screen is you might think like, oh, it's a green screen, just set it up once and shoot everyone in front of it. But every single time you shoot for the green screen and you're like, okay, here's what this new setup looks like, it might mean that the lighting comes from a different place, that to make it believable into the set that you're putting it in, or you need to choose a new angle or shoot it from a different focal length. So there's all of these tiny little decisions that if Josh and I were just sort of like figuring it out, or Jake and I were just jumping into it, we might make a lot of mistakes and be like, yeah, just this seems fine over here. And then you go and edit and go like, actually, it looks completely off. They don't look like they fit into the scene that we're putting them into. So there's a lot of intricacy that goes into shooting on green screen.
Yeah. John's basically being asked to imagine an environment and then imagine where the light is coming from in that environment, mm-hmm. and then trying to recreate that lighting so that when the person is standing in that environment, it looks believable. Because you definitely can't have somebody standing in front of a window facing out towards the window and the light's behind their head, right? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Depending, unless they're like, if you're in a theater, though, and it's like, okay, you're in a theater, you're on stage, where's the light coming from?
Yeah.
And will it all match? And now we go, okay, now we want to be in front of them. And he's got to be like, okay, well, what's the lighting look like from there?
Yep.
So, yeah, so much work put into all this stuff, so much thought put into this stuff. And then I actually wanted to shout out that Olivia and Kat, who were on the Game Nights episode, we had to shoot their parts so that they could go into their college videos, because we thought it would be like each person that was in the game
should be in their college video. Yeah.
Right. Had to show up at least in their college video.
Or be a voiceover.
Yeah. And I had one quick shot as Hamlet, right?
Yeah.
So, but Olivia and Kat were here so early because we shot Game Nights, you know, earlier than we shot the college videos, and we hadn't even finished writing them yet. So we just had to kind of guess at what we might want them to do, and we had to light that in ourself and sort of guess at it. And I think you could tell with Olivia's, it doesn't fit as seamlessly in as when John's doing it, because he's better at it than we are. But we actually have clips from Kat and Olivia talking about their experience shooting the college video, so we can play that here.
When we were on set recording everything for the episode, we had some different stuffed animals and some critters that we were playing with that were going to sit as the stand-in for my my critter that I was going to be holding. And Ashlyn had this little critter that one of her friends had made. It was just like the cutest little thing. And I guess its name was Mana. And I just like not stop holding this thing and like just cuddling it and petting it. It was like my new little pet. And eventually Josh was like, okay, that's it. Like, Mana's going to be in the episode. He's going to be in the promo. So we ended up using Mana as the featured critter in the promo. And if you could only see me behind the scenes, like shooting those scenes, I was so happy. I was just really excited to be playing with the critter and then dropping it into the cauldron. And then I remember at one point they had like a giant like block in front of me as kind of like the CGI stand-in. And I just wanted to keep like karate chopping it. So we definitely did some of that. And yeah, so it was just like, literally, if you would tell me that I was going to stand in front of a camera and snowball a critter and then drop it into a cauldron and turn into a demon, like, I'm sold. It was awesome.
Shooting the Strixhaven college videos was super fun. I think we were some of the first folks that you guys had to work with. So we actually recorded, at least I did, a bunch of different parts that obviously, you know, like were spread out over a bunch of different students or people that we had featured in them. So it was really fun being able to kind of take a personality out of magic or out of, you know, that environment, that world, and bring it to life that wasn't necessarily like ascribed to a card. It wasn't something that you were necessarily playing a character. You could become one that would fit. So it was really fun to just take up that mantle of representing a school, representing one of the colleges, and making it something that's both uniquely yours and completely fits into this you know, plane that we were on. So it was a really neat experience, and it was fun kind of stepping outside of the box of just magic gameplay and it being so specifically, you know, tied to cards or the game itself and kind of building the world beyond that.
All right, so all this is to say that it was quite a big undertaking. We're glad everybody appreciated all that stuff, followed us on social media and commented on it and everything.
Yeah, and we hear that, you know, I think the Silver Quill Slam Poetry one was the first one out the gate, and I was blown away because I'd heard the scratch track, and we'll talk about this later, sort of like of the original version, but then when you see all the people, especially Josh, Kim, and Dee, who literally are born to be in this college...
Dee is the most perfect Silver Quill in that he already has the hair. And by the way, that costume was, he had it in his closet. This,
yeah.
Yeah, we didn't create that for him. He literally just owns that.
He's like, oh, you want me to dress like this?
Yeah.
Well, there it is.
Let's talk about Silver Quill really quick. Well, the post-production, I guess, on everything. Yeah. Well, I want to say that Sam and Patrick did such an amazing job doing a bunch of the VFX, but we also had to hire a bunch of freelance VFX people, freelance illustrators for the Lorehold one, which was animated. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to walk through the process really quick that it took to just go through one of these videos, or the process we went through. So Jimmy was talking about scratch track. So what we did for all of these is create what we call a radio edit, a sound only version, just to kind of give us a feel for is it going to work? And B, it's amazing how much just from the sound of something, you can picture it in your head and figure out if it's going to work.
And the timing and the pacing. Is there going to be music underneath? How are you going to accentuate it? Is one part dragging too long? You're going to have a much better idea if you just do the audio-only version.
So for Silver Quill, we're going to go ahead and just play you the rough radio edit that we put together in-house. And you'll notice this is done with just all our voices of the people in the office because we didn't need the final voices. We just need, is this going to work if multiple people are saying it? Or do we need one person to say the whole thing or what? So we did this, and you can listen to it.
So you think you could be Silver Quill? Call yourself one of us, dare to say we're the same. Carry our title and brandish our name. What's in a name? With the Stygian ink that flows thick through our veins, we craft poems and prose into blades from our brains, slicing sharp through our foes with each refined refrain.
From the darkest of swamps to the vastest of plains, we train in the arcane.
And you think you could be Silver Quill?
We are the leaders, out front, the trendsetters, slick, stylish go-getters. You won't find any better.
We are the speakers whose words shape the discourse.
Armed with artful imperatives, our adjectives out in force.
You can hate us, but don't even try to debate us. We are in our own league.
We have flow that keeps flowing. We will never stop going. No sign of fatigue.
You want style cut with power and the guts to pursue it?
Want respect and acclaim and to know how to use it?
You think you could be Silver Quill? Prove it.
Okay. Once the radio edit is done, it's time to go into production for the actual thing. So that's when we're bringing in John and the entire crew, lighting all the backdrops and doing all that stuff, and then shooting it and then putting it together. And this is raw. There's no VFX behind it. It's just sort of like in the theater of the mind because it's just the same green background over and over and over again.
What you don't want to do is you don't want to have to put backgrounds on to more shots than you need.
Yes.
So what you do is you cut the whole thing with green behind them. And then once that's locked, then you put the background, it's called compositing. You comp in what is the background or the VFX part of it so that you're not like doing that and then being like, well, actually, we want to use this shot instead and then having to do it all over again. So actually, we're going to show you the green screen rough version of this Silver Quill video without the effects in it.
So you think you could be Silver Quill? Call yourself one of us, try and say we're the same. Carry our title and brandish our name.
What's in a name? With a Stygian ink that flows thick through our veins?
We craft poems and prose into blades from our brains, slicing sharp through our foes with each refined refrain.
From the darkest of swamps to the vastest of plains.
We train in the arcade.
And you think you could be Silver Quill?
We are the leaders, out front the trendsetters. Slick, stylish go-getters you won't find any better.
We are the speakers whose words shape the discourse.
Armed with artful imperatives, our adjectives out in force.
You can hate us, but don't even try to debate us. We are in our own league.
We have flow that keeps flowing. We will never stop going. No sign of fatigue.
You want style cut with power and the guts to pursue it?
Want respect and acclaim and to know how to use it.
You think you could be Silver Quill?
Prove it.
Yeah, the funny thing is, like, when you work in the industry for long enough, you and I can look at that and we know, oh, that's going to be great.
Yeah.
But I think when you're new to the industry or aren't in it, you look at that and it's hard to tell because you get distracted by...
The green.
Yeah, the
fact
green.
That, yeah, why are they all, I don't know where they are, where their placement is, and so you sort of lose out on the actual, like, what's happening.
Yep. So then, of course, Sam did almost all the effects for the Silver Quill one. He did a really awesome job of, and then he went to work, and we tweak, and we mess with stuff, and we finally get to the final version of Silver Quill, which we're going to play here. You've probably seen it, but hopefully you can stand and watch it one more time. I know I can.
Yeah.
So you think you could be Silver Quill? Call yourself one of us, try and say we're the same. Carry our title and brandish our name.
What's in a name? With a Stygian ink that flows thick through our veins?
We craft poems and prose into blades from our brains, slicing sharp through our foes with each refined refrain.
From the darkest of swamps to the vastest of plains.
We train in the arcade.
And you think you could be Silver Quill?
We are the leaders, out front the trendsetters. Slick, stylish go-getters you won't find any better.
We are the speakers whose words shape the discourse.
Armed with artful imperatives, our adjectives out in force.
You can hate us, but don't even try to debate us. We are in our own league.
We have flow that keeps flowing. We will never stop going. No sign of fatigue.
You want style cut with power and the guts to pursue it?
Want respect and acclaim and to know how to use it.
You think you could be Silver Quill?
Prove it.
There's a lot that goes into it. There's color correction as well, and each of the colleges needs to feel a little different. One might be a little cooler or a little darker. One might be brighter and happier. So there's just a lot of different elements that go in from making the rough thing until the final. And I'm sure people have seen those like VFX breakdowns of like the Avengers, and they're all running going, yeah. And there's like a guy that's supposed to be Groot, but it's like a dude holding a head on a stick running like this. Like, it does not really appeal to the imagination. So there's a lot of work that goes in between the first shot and the final product.
I want to give shouts to Gaurav Galati, who is a new member of our editing team, who actually came in, and I think on his first day or second day, was helping us cut the Witherbloom commercial. And then Jake Boss, who really sort of spearheaded the and supervised all the editing and visual effects and kind of on the post-production side, really was keeping us organized as to who was doing what. He was dealing with all the illustrators. He was dealing with most of the VFX people, funneling it through him to me so we could, you know,
because I express it.
Yeah, I'm more worried about like, how's it turning out? Let's make these changes to these shots. And Jake is going like, okay, this person's got to do that. But he's also doing some of the creative stuff of like giving them notes and making sure that everything's up to the standards. All our freelance VFX and illustrator people did an amazing job in a very short time. Lots of people worked on this stuff, so there's not going to be a chance for us to name each and every one of them. I want to make sure that you go into the credits, the show notes for this episode. You'll see the long list of credits for everybody that worked on that stuff. Give them some love because they really did some hard work. I did want to talk about, before we move on, Jimmy, because I think it's interesting. Silver Quill turned out amazing. We were all very happy with it. They all turned out great. I think Silver Quill, obviously, like a little cut above.
Probably because we have, I think Silver Quill appeals to literally who we are as, like, right? Like, yeah, Prismari, we are like, you know, theater majors, but when it comes to writing and editing and the precision of what Game Nights is, Silverquill does feel like that's the right school to match to what Game Nights is in real life.
And I think, you know, whatever parallel universe we were in, if we're going to make five of these, one of them was going to be better probably than the other ones. They weren't all going to be equal, right?
True.
So I think that's just, that just happened to be the one that in this universe came out on top. But there was also always going to be one that was harder, to a tougher nut to crack than the other ones. And this turned out to be Prismari for us. I'm going to name this chapter Problems with Prismari. And I wanted to highlight this because I think creators can look at stuff and just think that, like, you know, they see the Silver Quill and they think that, like, they just have it, they just know everything they're doing and it seems really cool and they did a great job. And you don't understand, there's a lot of struggle that goes behind it and
right.
a lot of, you know, a lot of the same problems that any creative person doing anything has, which is like, it's not working. How do we fix it? How do we make the best version of this possible? Prismari ended up being an issue in that we had an initial concept for what Prismari was and we shot all that stuff. And then as we started to put it together, we started to realize that that concept wasn't landing like we wanted to. So the initial concept for Prismari was that there was going to be all these people doing performance things in an empty auditorium, and we were just going to hear a person whispering words that started with a P. Like,
ah.
Power.
Passion.
Performance. Pizzazz. And we were going to put a long echo on those P words, and it was going to sound very... Because we were like, the Prismari, they're kind of pretentious, right?
Dramatic.
Yeah.
Overexerting a little bit, right? They're showy.
It was supposed to be like overly artistic, you know? And it was supposed to feel like pretentious, basically.
Yeah.
And
hipstery
then,
a bit, yeah.
Yeah, and so actually we have a rough cut of that version of the Prismari spot. So we'll go ahead and play that rough cut for you.
Performance. Perfection. Power. Positivity. Preeminence. Pizzazz. Persistence. Panaceticism. Panharmonicon. Prismari.
So y'all didn't like it. It didn't ring true.
Yeah, I think, you know, we put it together and we were like, you know, you watch it and you watch it again and you watch it again and you're just like, okay, it's not working. And now you're trying to identify like what the problem is that's not working so you can try and fix it. And what we diagnosed and I think is correct is that this version of Prismari felt different than all the other spots because none of the other colleges are making fun of themselves.
Yeah. And even if you weren't intentionally trying to make fun of yourself, the delivery of the words and that stuff does lend itself to being like, that's silly.
Yeah. It just feels like Prismari is not taking themselves seriously in that. And that's what we kind of felt was like, this wasn't true. It was like they're breaking character. This wasn't true.
Yeah. This isn't a Christopher Guest movie. This is like legit. Prismari do believe in what they're doing.
Now, the other ones are funny, right? Witherbloom's very funny where at the end, Day 9 says like, in Witherbloom, I get to be me. And he turns into a demon. And it's a joke. But a Witherbloom is not making fun of itself there. It's not that kind of joke where he's saying, well, Witherblooms are all hippie. But Prismari felt more like Prismari was making fun of itself. And so we played around a lot. And I'm talking like, now we're up to like, this thing has to get done. It has to release tomorrow or the day after that. And we're trying to figure out how to fix this thing. And we played around with some of the color filtering on it, the red and blue thing, to kind of give it some more stylization, which is a little pretentious, but is the type of thing Prismari would do that doesn't feel like they're making fun of themselves. It feels more true to them. And then we actually totally rewrote what was being said because we wanted it to feel like what it is like to create and be creative from the perspective of a creative person.
And ultimately, these are supposed to be recruitment videos, right? Like, why do you want to come to this college? Because of X, Y, and Z, not because we are silly and wear tutus and whisper P words, you know.
Because we're pretentious, right?
Or cod pieces or whatever it is, right? No, it's like, no, if you're a theater major, the last thing you're going to do is make fun of yourself.
Right. Now, you might do something that other people who aren't theater majors look at and go, well, that's pretentious.
Yeah.
But other people who are creative will look at it and go, like, that's me, right? So it's riding that line. It's like Silver Quill. If you're not, you know, if you're not cool or dress nice or have biting, condescending cool things to say to people, then you look at that and go like, well, those people are jerks. But a Silver Quill person looks at that and goes like, that's me. I want to be like that.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So this is what we sort of, with the new filter, color filters, and with rewriting the dialogue, this is the final version of Prismari.
You begin with nothing. And then a spark. An idea. It takes hold of you. That spark becomes a flame. It's a drop of water that becomes a river. A torrent changing all it touches. You are an artist. Where others see chaos, you see a canvas. It's not easy, but you fight past your doubts. You persevere. You're passionate. You're proud. You're a prodigy. You are Prismari.
So we task you, the audience watching now, which of these two versions do you actually think was better? And, you know, it's okay, by the way, to answer either one. Maybe you think that we should have gone a more comedic route intentionally or not. Or maybe you think that, yeah, you know what, we don't need to be so, I don't know, irreverent in that way that we delivered it originally. And the second one does feel more in line with the other colleges as well, which I think is important to note.
Yeah, and I think full disclosure, if we had the chance, I think... and we had unlimited time and budget, I think we probably would have rethought Prismari from the ground up.
Yeah.
But by the time we kind of realized what the fact that the initial concept was kind of like attacking from the wrong angle, it was too late to do a lot. So we kind of did what we could with what we had. And I think we did make it better in the end. But, well, anyway, that's how it turned out. I always think it's interesting to sort of see the issues behind the scenes of stuff and how they sort of tackle it and how they come up with what they come up with. And, you know, hopefully they make it better. But just so you know, the struggle's real.
The struggle is real.
All right. Well, I'd also like to know your favorite moments from the college videos overall.
I liked hearing Marshall Sutcliffe's voice.
Yeah.
There's something so iconic. Marshall Sutcliffe, by the way, is the reason that this podcast started.
That's a good point.
When Josh and I first listened to Limited Resources back in the day, that voice would be on my car radio or my
all
headphones.
All the time.
All the time. Yeah. We were just obsessed with drafting Unlimited, and he just has one of those just... silky, buttery, smooth voices. So hearing it come up in the lower hold video, I was like, that's Marshall. I know who it is. And so that, I thought that was a really fun cameo because he could also do it, you know, remotely.
Yeah.
You need to be in Los Angeles to help record that.
Yeah. One of the great fun things about this entire project was just bringing our friends in some respect, and so many of them,
yeah,
to just have a little bit of piece of as much as we could and everything. You know, you heard Prof's voice at a certain point, Maria's. Whenever we could use a voice, we would have a voice cameo, and so many different, you know, Josh, Kim, D, so many of the old game nights. And we also got to bring in people like Alexander Ward and Erica Ishii and other people from, you know, that we kind of tangentially know, but not through magic, to come in and be parts of it. And we got to say, like, Erica Ishii, you're definitely Silverquill.
You're definitely Silverquill. Yeah, everything
so
about you.
This is perfect. So that was a really fun part
and
of it.
And she agreed, of course.
Yeah. All right, okay. Let's talk about another part that always gets praise for every episode of Game Nights. It's the animations.
Whew, they just keep getting better. There weren't as many like 3D animated ones this time around, but we got to get sillier in different ways, which I think people noticed quite a bit. Or not sillier, more stylized or artistic, and take bigger risks, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, Prismari Command got called out by a ton of
people. That's my favorite by far.
Yeah, and it's interesting because that is a difficult card to animate, so I'm sure we'll put it on screen here, but if you look at it, you're like, geez, what do you do with that thing? Do you make every single thing move? It'll be a lot. It'll be too much movement. How do you do this? And the sort of the Charlie's Angels kind of disco vibe of it
K-pop
coming in.
K-pop world, like cool showcasey. And it felt Prismari as well, right? Yeah. I mean, do you think that the Prismari video that you would have done for the college entrance video would have changed after Prismari Command?
Probably.
Yeah.
If we knew what we knew, I think we would have looked at Prismari Command and been like, oh, that should be one of our guiding points that tells us like sort of, and I think we probably would have leaned into that and maybe gone more in that direction.
Yeah. A lot of love too for Wheel of Fortune.
Oh, yeah.
Because the art is old and kind of like not amazing, right, by current standards, but it's very iconic. So how are you going to bring life to that in a way that makes it feel epic? And in this case, you kind of went the opposite direction.
Yeah, I think it was Jake's idea, and he pitched it, and he was like, you like those old Hobbit animated movies, like the old Hanna-Barbera stuff.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, us having fun and leaning into that kind of stuff really does add, like, a little nod and a wink to the audience of, like, you know, we don't have to just do the dragon,
thing,
like, lands, breathes fire everywhere, and roars. You know, we can do that sometimes, but you can also do some fun and funny stuff.
Yeah, like the Toxic Deluge with the little fart noise,
yeah,
too, I think. It's kind of along those same lines.
I mean, if you can turn one of the animations into a joke, then you've legitimately, like, added to the production value of the show, right?
Yeah. And I think that also for magic players too, that love old art, new art, and everything in between, it gives you that full expressive thing. Because if you're right, if everything was just like, let's make it as cool and stylized as possible, we'd be making a Zack Snyder movie.
Right. And it would be 4x3 and 4 hours long. Okay. Big shouts to Sam Waldo and Patrick Nan, who really killed it with the animations in this Game Nights episode, despite also having to do all that work on the Strixhaven College videos. Sam really, really worked his butt off.
Yeah, Sam
dragging us across the finish line. You know, I felt bad because usually we get into these situations where I've bit off more than the team can chew. And one of the ways I can help solve that is just I personally work 110 hours that week.
Mm-hmm.
When it's VFX, I can't do that. And Sam really put in a lot of hours to make sure all this stuff looked really good. So Sam, don't worry, we gave him some time off afterwards as a thank you. But, you know, Sam really bailed water and really, you know, helped us out a lot to help finish all this stuff. And really, you know, the quality was still super high. It wasn't like it cost us anything. So Sam, Sam always just doing amazing work.
The best thing we can do for Sam in the future is just play the same cards we did in this episode and the ones prior so that he doesn't have to do it as much.
Play Prismari Command in every single video. That card is good. So.
I mean, honestly, I'm going to slam it into a couple of decks in the future because I want to see that animation again. It can't go to waste.
Speaking of the animations, there's one more little Easter egg we wanted to call out here. So there is a moment where Sign in Blood gets played, and let's show
it's a very important card in this deck.
Yeah,
in this game,
let's show the Sign in Blood animation one more time. So I'm not sure who came up with this. It was probably Jake or Sam.
Yeah, because they did this something else with Elish Norn, right, in the past.
Yeah, they've done it with Phyrexian. So
Phyrexian, yeah.
Sorry, the text Elish that sort of comes up on screen is actually like they're actually like some old Germanic runes.
Elder Futhark.
Yeah, and it actually spells out Josh Lee Kwai in these Germanic runes. So, yeah.
Great little Easter egg.
Great. And kudos to the people out there in the comments who actually went out and translated and said, oh, I know what that spells.
Yeah, I'm sure by the time they got to the J and the O, they're like, wait a second, Josh. Aha!
These guys are always thinking about that. I can almost guarantee if any words come up on screen, they will have thought of something that it's spelling out. So every time that happens, you should try and figure out what it says. That is definitely
going to be there are whispers, words being spelled out, just anywhere for, because it doesn't cost them anything, right? It's not that much extra work and it's a lot of fun and it makes you happier when you're making the thing.
Yep, for sure.
Big love to both of our guests, Olivia and Kat. Olivia's been on the show before, but this was Kat's first episode. It was great to just have two people that are also friends in real life because the chemistry around the table, we don't need to work at it. They're already friends. We already know everyone, and we're just able to play and have fun with it.
Yeah, it's always great to have Olivia on the show. She's a CAG member. She's an old friend of ours from way, way back. She's been on a bunch of episodes.
And an arm wrestling champ.
Oh boy, a lot of people asking about the arm wrestling. Maybe we'll have to set that up for sometime. She would probably kick my butt right now. I have not worked out clearly since the pandemic started.
Yeah. Me neither. Yeah.
Olivia, you can find on Twitter and on Twitch.
Yep, she plays Commander on Twitch, actually.
Yeah, she hosts like a bunch of people playing Commander all the time, plays with the members of the CAG and the RC all the time and other people in the community. And Kat, you can also find on Twitter and Instagram. She's at TarmoKat on both. And Olivia is at Gobert Hicks. And all those links, as always, are going to be in the show notes. So definitely find them, show them some love, let them know that you liked them on the episode.
Yep. And one last big shout out. We've shouted them out a lot because they did a lot. And we're talking a lot. Everyone pulled in a lot of extra hours to do this, except for me. Ashlyn Rose Lady Danger, they really dressed up not only the set up here, but if you go to like the Witherbloom video and the Quandrix video, you'll notice that the scene that I'm in where Freddy drinks from the vial and the scene that she's in with Craig are the same set, but completely different because of what's dressed on it. Which is pretty awesome. That's a lot of work, a lot of attention to detail, and so many times the small things in the corners that you don't see on camera, but they actually add to the complete full effect. That like makes a huge difference.
Yeah, for instance, in that scene where Lady puts the drop of poison or whatever on the orchid and it dies, you can see when they cut to the wide where Craig's there on the table is a little glowing vial with the Phyrexian symbol on it. So it's because Mr. Infect's there, so you have to have a little bit of poison. So Ashlyn and Lady really did think of everything. Really killed it with the small attention to detail. So great job. Again, all their info will be in the show notes, but you can follow them both on Twitter or find them on their various socials. And then big thanks to the editing team, Jake Boss, Josh Murphy, Manson Lung, who worked so, so hard to cut the game portion of Game Nights and really, you know, make sure that that is up to the standard. And I got to say, like, I was working on the college videos. I did not have a lot to do with the actual Game Nights episode this time. And I don't think you can tell at all. That's how good these guys have gotten at it. So huge ups to them for working so hard and getting that done.
It's to the point where when we play Commander, we'll sometimes be like, and then Josh Lee Kwai did this, and would just start doing the interview at the table because everyone's sort of gotten used to the cadence and all that stuff. So that's a lot of fun, too.
All right. Big thanks to Card Kingdom, who is our sponsor. CardKingdom.com/Command Zone is the place you want to go if you want to order your Magic products, singles, anything at all. You want to get those Commander pre-con decks from Strixhaven.
Oh, there are some good ones. Our Kaomancer's map in the Lorehold one. Oh, so many great cards.
You want to get those draft boosters, those collector boosters, so you can get your hands on the Mystical Archives or cool Japanese Japanese showcase, whatever they're called.
Yeah,
they look really, really, really sweet. In fact, that was a lot of the stuff when we were at Frankenstein that Post Malone was picking up, was the Japanese stuff. So yeah, if you want to get your hands on any of that, CardKingdom.com/Command Zone.
And of course, patrons get to watch game nights and extra turns a day early. They're going to be able to watch that next episode of game nights coming up with a very special postie in it. I think we've announced it somewhere else, hopefully before this video comes out. Who cares? If you're watching to this point, now you know. It's pretty obvious from the pictures that we tweeted. Make sure you follow us on social media as well. And go to patreon.com/Command Zone. Sign up. You can find us on Discord. Josh and I are always there asking questions, and we can dive deeper into a lot of the questions that get asked here. And sometimes even our patrons point out the mistakes that we make so that we can go back and fix some of them if they're fixable.
Yeah, sometimes they're not, sometimes they are. But yeah, they definitely give us a chance to do so. And yeah, that's a good thing, or a good thing to say. If you're not following us on social media like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, then you probably didn't hear that Post Malone is going to be a guest on the next game night. So make sure that you go and follow us on those social media platforms so that you know that stuff.
Yeah, and there's going to be some cool behind the scenes stuff as well. Some Patreon exclusive stuff, but you definitely want to be the people that see this episode first, because this is what I'm calling it. It's a watershed moment in Magic the Gathering's history.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Excited for you to see it. It is like a month away.
Yeah.
You're
currently pre Malone.
Yeah. And then it's going to be post Malone next.
A lot of people made that joke. I can't take credit for it.
Yeah. We're still editing the episode. It takes a while, but it will come out. We just want you to be ready for it. Join our Patreon so you can see it early. Okay, everybody. Okay. Thanks for watching.
We'll see you next time.
Peace.
For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.